Our final Fair Credit Reporting Act case of the day is Murray against AT&T Mobility, or at least I believe it's AT&T Mobility. Mr. Latterner, who do you think the defendant is? I'll be asking Mr. Peters that question.
It's actually it's AT&T Wireless operating under New Singular. It was the defendant was referred to generally as New Singular.
AT&T told us in an earlier case that New Singular Wireless Services has been abolished, that it no longer exists.
I believe that's true. We can call it AT&T, we can call it New Singular.
Suing a non-existent entity is not really very useful. It seems to me we need to know the real defendant. Now, of course, AT&T's brief in this case asserts that New Singular Wireless does exist.
I'll
pursue that with Mr. Peters.
AT&T, and then it became New Singular. We sued New Singular on a prior AT&T Wireless mailer and have tended to refer to the defendant as New Singular here and in the district court. Under the FCRA, companies sending out pre-screen mailers are required to make certain disclosures in a clear and conspicuous statement, and that is found in 15 U.S.C. 1681, small m, paren, small d. The court found that the disclosures here are not clear and conspicuous. They are opt-out disclosures. However, it then held that the violation was not willful, using a standard that was subsequently superseded by the U.S. Supreme Court. Willfulness includes reckless conduct, and under this analysis, the issues are whether New Singular's reading of the conspicuous requirement, although erroneous, was reasonable, and was the violation more than careless. The reasonableness requirement is determined by whether there was authoritative guidance from a court of appeals on the issue at the time the mailer was sent. There was. 11 years prior to New Singular's mailer, the Fifth Circuit in Stevenson versus TRW set forth the standard for conspicuousness in the FCA by applying a definition it called a staple in commercial law and is found in the Uniform Commercial Code and other commercial regulatory statutes. The basic concept or requirement is whether the clause is so written that a reasonable person ought to have noticed it. The test is whether attention has been reasonably called to the provision. The mailer in this case, which is found on pages 12 and 13 of the appendix, and which I have here, does not conspicuously disclose the opt-out notice. The opt-out notice is in the small print at the very bottom, the very last paragraph of the second page. The first page is basically text with many provisions in bold type, in large type, or both.
I don't think you have to persuade us of that. We know from the current regulation that this would be non-compliant. So if you're thinking about the Safeco insurance, the question is what text, I hate to say what statutory citation, but what text of some kind that existed before this offer was made made it reckless to think that that was conspicuous?
Stevenson versus TRW, which determined an issue of conspicuousness under the FCRA, a clear and conspicuous requirement. New Singular states that a provision is not conspicuous if it is printed in small print on the back of the document, as was done here. Here the notice is not only on the back, it's at the very bottom, and it's even below the copyright designation. Stevenson said the disclosure is not conspicuous if it is the same size and typeface as the terms around it, or when it is not in boldface or capital lettering. It's in the same text as the terms just preceding it, much smaller than everything else, and it is not in boldface type. The disclosure is far smaller than anything on the first 87.5% of the mailer.
Mr. LaTurner, suppose we agreed with you on the first part of the Safeco test, that it was objectively unreasonable for whoever they are, AT&T, Singular, to think that this teeny disclosure was clear and conspicuous. We would then have to move to the other part of Safeco, which I think is it's an interesting test to try to conceptualize. Namely, was Singular, by adopting the reading that it adopted, that merely putting the word disclosure in capital letters and nothing else, was it running a risk of violating the law substantially greater than the risk associated with a reading that was merely careless? So we need to figure out, what's the reading that's merely careless? What's the reading that they chose? And what's the difference in terms of risk? You know, what's kind of a marginal concept here?
You have to look at the fact that, well, let me go back. Stevenson not only defined it, but said it's a staple in commercial law. New Singular is a big company. They have a lot of commercial business that's going on. It has to deal with the commercial, clear, and conspicuous concept all the time.
So you think that there was a very low risk of a careless reading and a higher risk of violating the law by their recklessness? Or, I mean, how do we get the gap, if you will, between the merely careless risk level and the reckless risk level that Safeco seems to be talking about? Because I have to say, the one thing that troubles me about your reading of Safeco is the outcome in that case. I mean, the Supreme Court, after all is said and done, decides in favor of the company.
Because there was no prior discussion on the violation that they had there. Here, Stevenson was a prior FCRA discussion on conspicuousness. And with regard to careless or more than careless and reckless, there are some things you can just simply look at and say, that's not conspicuous, period. It's somewhat reminiscent of Justice Stewart's famous comment that there are some things he can't define, but he knows it when he sees it.
Unfortunately, once you say something like that, it's very hard to say that somebody who saw it differently must have been reckless. If it's all in the eye of the beholder, that's what Stewart was saying, then you can't insist that everybody see it the same way. And your case depends on an argument that everybody has to see it the same way.
I believe Justice Stewart was saying that there are some things that are pornography and you cannot determine it to be anything else. And I am saying you look at this.
On a Supreme Court that routinely decided pornography cases by votes of 2-2-1-1-3, which he well knew. The two, Black and Douglas, were absolutists. You know, I can go through what Brennan was saying, what Warren was saying. The whole reason he was saying that is because he knew his court was so fractured on that question that it could not produce a majority. He was saying it was person-specific.
I believe.
In the eye of the beholder.
But we understand that you are arguing that no objective person anywhere could think that this writing was...
Under Safeco, it is an objective reasonableness standard, and this disclosure is not objectively reasonable, and it would be an issue for the jury, which Safeco indicated and the Whitfield Court from the Third Circuit also indicated. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Peters.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Counsel Charles Peters, on behalf of New Singular Wireless, which was formerly known as AT&T Wireless, and Judge Easterbrook still is a separate entity. Singular Wireless became AT&T Mobility, but New Singular Wireless, which is the former AT&T Wireless Services, Inc., is a separate entity.
Why do you have all those ads then, you know, in with the AT&T stores saying, you know, now we're AT&T? I mean,
because Singular became AT&T.
Well, I know they did, but now you're saying
the whole history of
everybody
it.
With Singular, with what, a phone that's morphed from Singular to AT&T has now morphed back into a Singular phone?
The phone.
There is actually a corporation. You can just drop it at that. There's a corporation today called New Singular Wireless, Inc.
Correct.
All right. And they are the wireless provider for the larger AT&T company?
They was AT&T Wireless Services, Inc., which was then acquired by Singular. In the brief time that I have, I, too, would like to focus on the clear and conspicuous issue, unless the Court has particular questions about the firm offer issue. The Court should affirm Judge Castillo's decision because Mr. Murray cannot meet either prong of the two-prong test that Judge Wood recognized the court in Safeco adopted. Safeco decided what willfulness meant in terms of saying it's both knowing and reckless conduct. In this case, at least on appeal, there's never been a claim that there was a knowing violation. It's always focused on recklessness. And in Safeco, what the court did is adopted a two-prong test. It said, first, the plaintiff must establish that the defendant was objectively unreasonable. That's an objective test, doesn't get into the state of mind. And then second, if you get past that objective unreasonableness prong, you have to look at the issue that Judge Wood focused on, which is did they disregard the risk beyond being merely negligent?
And frankly, looking at this disclosure, it's awfully hard to me to imagine a person in their right mind thinking that this is a clear and conspicuous disclosure. I'm getting old enough that it's hard to read it without some sort of assistance.
I will say something stronger. It was not possible for me to read it.
I'm coming off of cataract surgery and a detached retina, and I will say you that I can read it, but I really want to focus it because everybody can argue that it should be more prominent. That's really not what the issue is.
But that trivializes the point that we're making.
I understand.
It's so unprominent that how can you say that it's clear and conspicuous?
I think that the best way to look at it is the way that Judge Castillo looked at it. And what he recognized is that clear and conspicuous, well, let me back up for a second. Clear and conspicuous doesn't mean it was correct, doesn't mean that it was right, and I understand that the court's not focusing on that. But what the courts have recognized is unless there was clearly established law that recognized, that made it clear that your interpretation was wrong, it's not objectively reasonable. In this case, it was pre-Cole. You didn't have the guidance of Cole. So that there, and Cole itself recognized that what conspicuous means is somewhat lacking in definition. But what the court did, the lower court said, is look at all of the cases that have decided conspicuous under, it actually focused on Cole, and I'm sure the court was paying great deference, said, but when you're analyzing whether something is conspicuous.
And why shouldn't we assume that when Congress uses words like clear and conspicuous, they know that this is a well-known term in commercial law, and we know from Schumer boxes, we know from all sorts of things what it means to make something. Forget it even about clear. For all I know, this is a redundant phrase, as so many are. Maybe just conspicuous. What's conspicuous about this little sentence?
What the cases interpreting conspicuous say is, at least some of them, and particularly I direct you to, for example, the Fourth Circuit's decision in Guimond, as well as the other cases that we talk about, the Clements Farm cases, ROW Windows, that you can't just focus on whether or not it's small print. That's what the plaintiff wants to do.
And I'm not. One could do a relative look at this page. Everything you need in the palm of your hand strikes me as a conspicuous sentence. this little bitty thing, you have the right to prohibit information, et cetera, does not strike me as conspicuous, but either relatively, absolutely, or any other way.
What those cases talk about is that something can be conspicuous despite being in small print if it's got a heading that's capitalized. It has a heading that's capitalized. Now, you can argue that the capitalization should have been larger.
The capitalization is in two-point type itself. I mean, it's...
But in terms of looking at willfulness, which is really the issue that I think you have to focus on in the objective unreasonableness, what the guidance was at the time was, does it have a heading that's capitalized? Is it set off by spacing? It's set off by spacing in terms of all of the disclosures are set off from the rest of the text. Is the actual wording itself set off from other wording immediately before it and afterwards? It is. Those are all things that other courts have said you need to look at to determine whether or not it's conspicuous. You may disagree, and I would certainly agree that there is a lot of room for disagreement here. But the question really is...
I think you need to look at each thing on its own. I don't have in front of me the actual documents that those other courts were reviewing, but I certainly can see what this looks like. And the only thing you can say is that this is, there's just little bitty print at the bottom of the page, and all the rest of these things, the picture of the phone is very conspicuous, the little bubbles around the phone are, it's not objectively, maybe one person in a million might find this conspicuous, but I can't. That's not the standard. It's an objective standard.
The standard is whether or not under Safeco, and indeed this court's other interpretations of objective reasonableness in decisions like Lott v. Pfizer is, is there clear guidance?
Well, no. It's a two-part test for Safeco, which is why I went to the second part, because it seems to me you would have a very difficult time showing that this is clear and conspicuous. It seems to me it's objectively unreasonable to say that. Whether you were running a risk of violating the law substantially greater than the risk associated with merely being careless, separate inquiry under Safeco.
I absolutely agree with you. All I'm saying is that under the objective reasonableness test, as this court has defined it in cases like Lott v. Pfizer, it is you got to look at whether there's clear guidance. And before I move to the second prong, because I know it's important to you, Judge Wood, the only thing that I want to hasten to add is that Congress itself recognized that the term conspicuous needed clarification, that there was ambiguity. At the time that this was adopted, at the time this notice was sent out, which is the fall of 2004, October of 2004, Congress had directed the FTC to come up with what it said is you have to provide print size, notice,
right,
manner, et cetera, according to rules that the FTC shall establish, recognizing the ambiguity of it. Congress or the FTC had not yet adopted those rules. So as a matter of statutory construction.
Or maybe just recognizing that that's a much more efficient way to go about things than having courts having to sit here and pore over all of these things. If the FTC just comes out with some rules, or the Federal Reserve Board or the Controller of the Currency, whoever wants to do it, then business can move on. I'm sure companies like your client would be happy to comply if there's some clear rule out there.
And I agree, and I completely agree with you, but the problem is that at the time this mailing went out, there wasn't that clear guidance. Congress had recognized that there was
any... Is it your position then that since there, quote, was no clear guidance because of this inquiry that was about to be made, that allowed New Singular to not take any direction from the Fifth Circuit case?
I think that to answer your question directly, the Fifth Circuit case in and of itself is not clear guidance because the Fourth Circuit had decided it differently, and all of these cases are highly fact-specific. That's what Judge Castillo recognized.
Yeah, well, if they're only, then we could. You'll never reach the second level, right? As long as there's what would constitute in this world not clear conspicuous, as long as we have these ranges that are.
I think that the answer there is, and I hate to sound a little bit flip, but I always explain it in terms of the sort of where's Waldo situation, where something is truly hidden. Here, conspicuous doesn't necessarily mean prominent. It's there. The picture next to each of you is conspicuous. It may not be prominent. If somebody has truly, it's hidden in there. It's not conspicuous. That's a certainly plausible, and indeed courts regularly have recognized that that's the meaning. If I could, in the short time that I have, I want to turn to the second prong of Safeco that Judge Wood is interested in. And what the court, this court has defined recklessness in terms of looking at the mental state in a number of cases. I direct you to cases we cited like West v. Waymire, the Vigortone case, and it's basically civil recklessness, which requires there to be some conscious or deliberate steps to disregard a known or obvious risk. Here, the plaintiff had the opportunity to present evidence that there was some conscious, deliberate disregard of risk. And they failed to present any evidence at all of that. There's no evidence at all.
How would you do that other than to depose drafters of the document?
You could do that, and they have in other cases. You could do that. You could probe what was done in terms of the legal review here to see whether or not the legal review was itself reasonable.
You can make inquiry of House counsel?
You can't ask for privileged communications, but you can make inquiry. I'm not conceding that, but that is something that would be an opportunity there. I don't think that you can get into the privilege, but if there's a legal review, and maybe done by a compliance officer, as was the case in the first FCRA case, you could probe that to see that. Here, they didn't meet their burden under Celotex to show that there was a conscious disregard. And the second prong of Safeco requires that. I see my time's up. Unless the court has any further questions, I'd urge you to affirm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Peters. Anything further, Mr. Letterman?
Going to the recklessness issue, in the mailer, they capitalized, still in small print, the word disclosure in the paragraph that contains the opt-out notice. That shows that New Singular was aware that they had to do something in order to make this conspicuous. And they did it that way, totally ineffectively, and that shows a recklessness. This is not where they forgot something. This is not where they overlooked something on a mailer. This is where they said, we will just put this little thing in here and maybe that'll go by it. It's reckless. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.